Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. Hope you backed it in, denimed all up, and came strong on your way into the holiday weekend. What a show today. A lot of podcasts for you. So let's start with the bad news first. Bartolo Colon designated for assignment, but there is some good news. Rick in Buffalo avoided getting the choppa. The legend, Brad and Corona, made a rare appearance, and he took on the champ. And Chad in L.A. RSVP, too. Plus, we had John Calipari live from Cairo. We talked about the rumors that were tying him to the Knicks. Detroit Pistons first-rounder Luke Kennard made his jungle debut. Frank Isola broke down what went wrong with Phil Jackson and the Knicks. An enormous show. Plus, Alvy's week that was. No time to waste. Alvy, let's get this thing going right now. The tweet that I'm referring to came from the Atlanta Braves Twitter account, and it read, quote, "The Braves today designated RHP Bartolo Colon for assignment and selected the contract of LHP Rex Brothers from AAA. I mean, somebody tell me that the Braves official account has been hacked, because if that's a real tweet, then yesterday, June 29th, 2017, is officially the day the music died. You talk about an all-time gut punch. You talk about getting kicked in your junk. That is easily the biggest. Pick whatever cliche you want. It hurts. It's the worst thing to baseball, to happen to baseball since, I'm going to say since, well, hell, ever. There's never been anything worse in the history of baseball. Not the Black Sox scandal. Not the Royd era. All of that, small potatoes compared to the end of the big sexy era. Look, I don't care if Barcolon had an ERA of over 8. I don't care if he was giving up nearly a knock and a half per inning. That's just bad luck. Check the analytics. He's not giving up a ton of more hard hit balls. They're just finding holes. Seeing eye ground balls. You're going to cut the guy, what? Because he's given up 11 home runs? Then go ahead and cut Clayton Kershaw because he's given up 13 in just May and June alone. You're dumping Bartolo Colon, and then you're replacing him with Rex Brothers. I don't care how good Rex Brothers is. I don't care if it's Rex Ryan and his brother. You don't get rid of Bartolo Colon for anyone. You could have Cy Young, Sandy Koufax, and Nolan Ryan all up in AAA, and you keep them all there until Bart Colon says you can call them up. No wonder the Braves got shut out last night by the Padres. They were missing their heart and soul, their workhorse, and their offensive firepower. I think I speak for a nation. No, I think I speak for the entire planet when I say that it must have been love, but it's over now.
Colon rips one. It's a base hit, Colon. Let's watch him run around first. Bartolo Colon with his first base hit of the year.
And he swings and lines a base hit and gives the Mets the lead. He shattered his bat. He lost his helmet. He dunked it into right field. And Colon has everybody smiling.
Element RBI double.
And Colon bangs one up the middle for a base hit. Bartolo Colon with a new career high.
Play.
And Colon hits it in the air, left center field, over toward the gap goes Ichiro to make the catch, but Campbell tags and comes in with a tying run. Another RBI for the hitting Colt hero, Bartolo Colon.
And the ball takes his big cut, and he loses his helmet, and the crowd goes wild.
He took a Ruthian slam here.
And Colon drives one to center field, that's a base hit, and it gets by Suzuki. Into second with an RBI double.
Colon, the rally starter.
As awesome as that tribute is, it's still just a small part of Big Bart. It does not include the 2,407 career strikeouts, the 235 career wins, and the millions of smiles that he gave us. He wasn't selfish with his talents either. He shared them with clubhouses in Cleveland, Montreal, Chicago, Anaheim, Boston, Chicago again. The Yankees, the A's, the Mets, the Atlanta Braves. I mean, his catches gave and gave and gave. And then he gave some more. Tell you what, who will ever forget where they were on Saturday, May 7th, 2016, when Bartolo Colon came to the plate with one on, Two out in the top of the second in San Diego. On the mound, James Shields, an all-star, a man who finished third in the Cy Young voting, and had nine straight seasons with double-digit wins. Cologne dug into the batter's box, and then this happened.
Cologne looking for his first hit of the year.
Oh. He drives one, deep left field. Back goes Upton, back near the wall. It's out of here! Bartolo has done it! The impossible has happened!
The team vacates the dugout as Bartolo takes the long trot, his first career home run, and there will be nobody in the dugout to greet him. This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball. Bartolo Colon has gone deep.
That was one of the great moments in the history of sports. That was one of the great moments in the history of the world. Go find that video if you don't remember how great that was. Because that was the most beautiful sight these eyes have ever seen. And that sound, did you hear the way that sounded when he made contact? It was like a mini explosion. An absolutely amazing sound. But don't take my word for it. Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard, quote, "I wasn't paying attention. I was mid-conversation with somebody in the dugout. I heard the crack of the bat, and it sounded like a cannon going off." Or relief pitcher Jerry Blevins, quote, "Logan Verrett and I were in the bullpen, and as soon as it got hit, this is how I describe it. It was the moment when two grown men were jumping, holding each other in pure joy." Or Mets hitting coach Kevin Long, quote, "It was like a walk-off homer in the seventh game of the World Series. People were going crazy. What a great human being, a great teammate. And for something magical like that to happen, it was a lot of excitement," end quote. Right, that was Bartolo Colon, a few weeks shy of his 43rd birthday, going yard and making it look easy. And yes, he took more than a half a minute to circle the bases. And no, he wasn't pimping it. But if he was, who was going to complain? This guy's a freaking legend. When Bart was called up to Cleveland as a rookie, he played with Julio Franco. I'm pretty sure Julio Franco played with Lou Gehrig. How old is Bartolo Colon? Julio Franco turns 59 in August, and they were teammates. That's how old Bartolo Colon is. And no, the reason I'm leading with this, the reason I'm getting all hyped up on this, I'm not ready for this to end. Nor does it have to, because there is a report that the Mets might be interested in signing Big Bart. Let me say this right now. They better not be joking. The Mets season has been a complete and utter disaster. But bringing in Bart would turn it all around. That would be their World Series. I don't want him to play for the Mets. I need him to play for the Mets. But knowing the Mets, they'll promote Tim Tebow instead of signing Bart Colon. And if that's the case, I say don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And it was glorious. Yeah, but don't jack this up. Mets, bring this guy back. Bring this guy in. Had to lead with it. Again, I don't want to bum you out. And I hate to start on a down note, but I've got way too much respect for Bart. I hope that's not it. I know he can help somebody. I know the Mets need him. And I know you need to go find that home run and watch it again. Dear Rome, I have been constantly refreshing the Braves feed, looking and hoping for their "What's Poppin' Twitter?" predictable tweet for their hacked account. Signed everyone. Chris no longer in St. Pete. Wore fat pitchers who can swing the lumber. Wore outside sales. I know, it's so true. I'm so hoping that they got hacked. John Calipari is my guest. In the event that somebody does not know, I have to ask, where are you right now and how is life treating you?
Hi, I'm in Egypt. I was riding camels this afternoon. Went to the pyramids. We just are leaving the gym because we had to get a practice in. And I'm having a ball. What a great group of guys. You know, two of them are the guys I'm going to coach next year, but the rest of them are from different colleges, going to different colleges, or some young kids, but I'm having a ball.
John Calipari joining us. John, go back to the camel ride. How did the camel ride treat you, and how was the trip to visit the pyramids?
My son saw the pyramids. I'll send you a picture of it. But he looked, and he said, "There's no way you got on that camel yourself." And I said to him, I jumped up there. The problem is you got your mother's legs because he can't jump. He can't run either. But, no, it was fun. Yeah, you know, I jumped up there, and then all the players got on a camel. It was good. You know, none of us. I You've ridden a camel, right?
No, I have not, John. You know I haven't.
There you go. So there's another thing I've done that you haven't done.
You own me, John. You've done everything that I haven't done. I'm not sure I've ever done anything that you've done. And I know I've never gotten up on a camel.
Well, we both enjoy soccer. You still enjoy soccer?
I still do not enjoy soccer. You?
Yeah. No, I can't stand it.
Good.
It's all right.
We got something in common then. Good. Clones, let me break for a minute. I want to talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. John Calipari joining us, as he mentioned, from Egypt. John, USA Basketball has won gold in three of the last four U19 championships. You know the players are aware of the guys who came before them on U19 teams, guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Marcus Smart, and more. How much pressure is there on these guys to live up to that legacy?
Well, I'm trying to tell them, and they've really gotten better. We've only been together 7 days. The difference is some of these teams over here have been together for years. As 16s, 17s, and 18s. They do it different in these other countries. But this team has come together, and what I want them all to do, I want them all to leave where they feel that they've improved or they've been given stuff that are going to help them be better players. Second thing is trying to figure out at game time, winning time, who are the five on the court. And we're trying to figure that out as we go forward. So I'm trying to play 10 and a half, 10 guys in one half, and just to figure out who's who. But they're guys are doing great, and I don't think they probably do. At the end of the day, when we get down to it, we're all going to want to win that gold. But my thing is, let's just worry about being as good as we can be, and that should take care of all the other stuff.
John Calipari joining us. Now, John, from a coaching standpoint, you've got Tad Boyle from Colorado. You have Danny Manning from Wake Forest as your assistants. What's it been like working with them?
You know, I coached both of them at Kansas, right?
Sure.
You know, and Danny and, you know, you remember Danny and the Miracles?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they won a national title. I had to remind this team that he was the number one pick in the draft, truly the first positionless basketball player that we now call positionless was Danny Manning. Tad Boyle was our starting point guard when I was there. I was a little bit younger. We used to play one-on-one, but I used to bust it. I had to make him put knee pads and stuff on because I was busting his knees and ankles.
Come on.
I was younger. I was younger then.
John Calipari joining us. Yeah, in Egypt. John, now you're on the other side of the world. When you're not busting guys up, you're checking out the pyramids, you're riding camels, you're coaching basketball, and then there's a report yesterday that somebody reached out to the Knicks on your behalf to express interest in the team's president of operations position. What was your reaction when you woke up and you saw that story?
Well, my phone blew up at 4:45 a.m. here, and I started looking like, what in the world? And I just shook my head. I called my wife and said, honey, there's nothing to this unless you call Jim Dolan, and she said she didn't. So I called my son and said, nothing to it, son. I had to leave a message, and I said, unless you call Jim Dolan. Because the bottom line is, talking to anybody at the Knicks doesn't matter. It's Jim Dolan. And you know what? I'm in Kentucky. I'm not going to reach out to anybody. And you know what? On top of it, I got the best job. So I'm looking at this just laughing. But it's every year, Jim. You know that. There's, you know, I did this, or somebody contacted me, and it is what it is. I just, you know, I mean, I guess it's good for headlines, but the reality of it is, you know, I'm over in Egypt. What am I in? I'm on a different time frame right now.
You know, John, it is every single year, and you and I talk about this every single year. Let me ask you this. I mean, this is how you feel right now, and maybe you'd say never, but do you feel like you have any unfinished business, John, in the NBA? Is there any kind of itch that you might want to scratch at some point?
All the stuff that's happened to me, and you knew me when we both had holes in our shoes, okay? I'm hoping you look at me and I look at you and say we're the same guy. Even though some good things have happened to us and we've been blessed, we're still the same guy. And I look at this right now, and all the things that have happened to me, for me to feel that I have to do one more thing, or I have to win more games than this other guy, or I have to, you know, prove, I'm not in that mode. My mode right now is, how many kids can I help? How many assistant coaches can I help become head coaches before I retire? Is there any chance that I can get 12 kids in that All-Star game? 12 players that I coached in the NBA All-Star game. If I do that, then I'm going to feel fulfilled.
John Calipari joining us. He is the head coach of USA Basketball U19 team. You know, John, I could talk to you about any number of guys who have come through your program, wherever you've been. But let me ask you about Marcus Camby, because he had graduation, and last month you attended a graduation of his from UMass. What was the experience like for you, and why was he so special to you?
Well, he only played 3 years. So he didn't play 4 years. He played three. But let me just say this. He was a young man that was one of the best teammates that I've ever coached. He wasn't afraid to defer to his team. He wasn't afraid to come up to me if I was being too hard on a player and say, "Coach, man, let up a little bit. The kid, he's doing great." And his first year, he was so physically weak and out of shape that I had to change a lot of stuff to make sure he was playing, because you had to bench 200 pounds, and you had to do 10 dips, and you had to do these kind of runs. Well, he couldn't do any of that. So I changed it all. I just said, look, he's playing. I don't care if he's not in shape. And I used timeouts for him to get a break. I didn't have strategic timeouts. It's just when he raised his fist and I made him run three more times, then I called a timeout so he got a blow, because I didn't want to take him out of games. He only played 20 minutes a game, but he was a ball to coach. To this day, when he calls me, he says, "Coach, I love you." Now, you think about that. That was a long time ago that I coached him. And, you know, he was one that I don't get the next job unless I coach him. And I tell him that all the time.
Let's find out what Rick's got. We go to Buffalo. He's got a golden ticket. Is he going to get through the phone call and still have that golden ticket? We're going to find out right now.
I love you.
Coach, what's cracking? What's
another
up?
Another one of your former UMass players.
Not too much, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Affection recently.
Everything's good here.
So one of the things that you taught him was about passion.
Well, you got to love Dan
and
quote, Denver coming in here last week.
You show your feelings as a man. End quote.
And
you can tell somebody you love them.
And then
what's it mean then to hear that from a former player like Luke?
Brian Adams, Canadian blast.
You know,
way to go,
again. You know,
we've never heard that one before.
A lot of these kids now.
But I guess you can expect that kind of trash coming from a guy who throws surprise birthday parties for his cat.
NBA guys,
you know,
make $25 million a year.
I'm starting to think it's a Colorado thing, because Luke in Fort Collins
so
is another one without a freaking clue.
They're built up,
no,
they're
knew Luke
up,
was
they're lied to,
but even
they're
I didn't
dragged,
think he was stupid
they're,
enough
they're
to say the smack off is going
to
be less
this,
interesting
this,
than this year's All-Star game. Maybe if it consists
of the
15 of your pathetic calls,
they want someone to tell them the truth. They want someone to be tough on them. They want someone to
honor my father by getting golden ticket routine.
They want someone to care enough to make it about them, not the other guy.
Stop calling and embarrassing yourself.
And so a guy like
Luke, I'd say Luke has a year's worth of pay, but I'm going to go ahead and give that to Vic in NoCal.
You become that
Victor wants
us
all to believe he's been a diehard Warriors fan.
You're not there for anything other than to help him and to love on
Earl Boykin.
Well,
sure you have, Vic.
These kids, that's
just
what
like you're making $250K and don't have to pay for female companionships. The part about you getting kissed about missing out on a
Brandon
free taco, I do believe, though, because you've been leeching off the system your entire life, you scumbag.
And what a great kid.
And how great is
the gym
watching the Colts fall all over themselves this season. I got nothing against the team. It's their fans I can't stand.
You know,
I absolutely love how these losers set their lives in out complete after last year's title. Then they went home and realized their wives were still ugly and their kids were still hopeless.
You know, that's the
now they're all freaking. It's only
going to
be another 108 years for the next one. So clever, Colts fans. At least you got that clown Joe Madden to laugh at. Enjoy mediocrity, Chicago.
Warren, people can tell you maybe mad when you should.
Thanks for the vibe, Jim. I'll see you next month.
How do I prepare these kids for the rest of their life? How do I make it so that their parents can breathe for the first time? And if I love on them, they're going to love on each other. If I make it about them, they'll make it about winning. They'll make it about sharing for each other. And I'm hoping everybody that watches my team year to year says, how in the world does he get a bunch of young guys to do this? How does he get them to share? Real simple. We make it about them. We make it about them. We got your back. We're loving on you. Even though I'm tough now, Jim, you watch me, coach. You know, I'm not over there just clapping now.
Now, guys want to be coached hard. John, guys do want to be coached hard. And the team you've got now, right now, is the U19 World Cup team, 2017 squad, in action tomorrow at 11:15. Hey, Cal, really quickly, what time is it there right now? And you've already ridden a camel today. You've already seen the pyramids today. What are you going to do for the rest of your day?
Well, I got a problem right now. It's 7:30 or so and p.m. And what's happened is I've been taking naps in the afternoon, so I'm waking traffic's crazy.
How do you sleep through
that,
Cal?
We're waking up at 4. Yeah, that camel. We almost hit that camel. I'm waking up at 4, so I'm getting workout. I'm on the elliptical by 6. I'm eating breakfast by 7. And I'm like, then by 1 o'clock, I'm exhausted. I take too much of a nap, and then I can't sleep at night. So I'm in that cycle right now. I'm trying to break it.
All right, well, don't forget, you got a game tomorrow. It's 11:15 a.m. John Calipari live from Cairo. Cal, thanks for coming on the show, especially from Egypt. It is always good to run you down, John. Great conversation, as always. Thank you very much. Good luck tomorrow.
Tell the wife and the boys I said hello.
Let's find out what Rick's got. We go to Buffalo. He's got a golden ticket. Is he going to get through the phone call and still have that golden ticket? We're going to find out right now. Rick, what's cracking? What's up?
Not too much, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm great. Everything's good here.
Good. Well, you got to love Dan in Denver coming in here last week, accusing people of plagiarizing takes. And then the very next thing out of his scrawny little mouth is a Bryan Adams Canadian blast. Way to go, Daniel. We've never heard that one before, but I guess we should expect that kind of trash coming from a guy who throws surprise birthday parties for his cat. You know, Jim, I'm starting to think it's a Colorado thing, because Luke in Fort Collins is another one without a friggin' clue. Now, I knew Luke was stupid, but even I didn't think he was stupid enough to say the smack-off's going to be less interesting than this year's All-Star game. Maybe if it consisted of 15 of your pathetic calls, it would be, you hacked. And enough of the, I want to honor my father by getting a golden ticket routine. You know how you can honor your old man? Stop calling the show and embarrassing yourself. I'd say Luke had the year's worst take, but I'm going to go ahead and give that to Vic in NoCal. Victor wants us all to believe he's been a diehard Warriors fan since the good old days of Bob Sura and Earl Boykins. Sure you have, Vic. Just like you're making $250K and don't have to pay for female companionship. The part about you getting pissed about missing out on a free taco, I do believe, though, because you've been leeching off the system your entire life, you scumbag. And how great is it, Jim, watching the Cubs fall all over themselves this season? I got nothing against the team. It's their fans I can't stand. I absolutely loved how these losers said their lives were now complete after last year's title. Then they went home and realized their wives were still ugly and their kids were still hopeless. Now they're all cracking. It's only going to be another 108 years till the next one. So clever, Cubs fan. At least you got that clown Joe Madden to laugh at. Enjoy mediocrity, Chicago. War Jim Kelly beating back cancer. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'll see you next month. I'm out.
Frank Isola is back. I thought you had a great piece in the Daily News yesterday that started with a plan that Phil Jackson had submitted to an Eastern Conference team a few years back. Frank, what was that plan and what was Jackson offering to do for that team?
Yeah, you know, Phil Jackson all along wanted to stay involved in basketball, but really mostly as a consultant. And in this situation, he was going to live out on the West Coast, come visit the team a few times a year, maybe do some marketing things with season ticket holders, but really consult the coaching staff, the front office. It looked like Sam Vincent would be the GM of this team, and he wanted to make a lot of money, between $2 and $3 million. I think Phil Jackson knew that as a consultant, he could keep his hand in it, but I think he knew he didn't really want to commit full-time to a job. And then I think that's the job that he also wanted with the Knicks, but Jim Dolan ended up blowing him out of the water. The Knicks wanted him to be the coach and the president of the team. And once the offer came in and he wasn't going to coach, but they still pursued him, and I think Phil Jackson took the job because the money was so great. But in the end, he just didn't have the energy. He didn't have the experience, the know-how, the skill set to really pull it off. It's not as easy as everyone wants to make it out to be. And I think, Jim, as you know, Phil is a smart guy, but, you know, sometimes I think he takes a little too far. He thinks he's the smartest guy out there. And in this case, I think he was a little naive to how difficult the job would be.
Frank Isola joining us. Now, Frank, when Phil was introduced to James Dolan, what did Phil see in James Dolan? For instance, did he see a sucker?
Well, I think what he saw in Irving Azoff was the mutual friend, and Irving Azoff is the manager of the Eagles, and he's friendly with Jim Dolan. The two are in business together. They have some type of entertainment company together where they put on a lot of shows, in fact, at the old L.A. Forum that has a lot of concerts. So I think it had a lot to do with Irving Azoff, and I think, you know, Jim Dolan kind of promised Phil Jackson, I'll stay out of it as much as I can. The interesting thing was, as Phil Jackson is running the Knicks, you know, Jim Dolan surprises everybody and brings Isaiah Thomas in to run the New York Liberty, which I think took Phil Jackson for a little bit of a loop. And I think Phil Jackson at that point probably realized maybe he might be in a little over his head with something like this. But I don't think it was so much as the sucker. I think that he thought, you know what, it's the Knicks. I have this connection with Red Holtzman. What a way to kind of cap my career by returning the Knicks to glory. But I just think, you know, Jim, you know this. All these GMs, they all have relationships. Most of them have relationships with, you know, half the league. You have to have relationships with player agents in order to make that work. That was never part of Phil's deal. And every time he was knocking players in the media, his biggest defenders would say, well, hey, come on, he did this with Kobe. He did it with Shaquille O'Neal. It's different when you're the coach and you're knocking players as opposed to the GM. Because as the coach, you're going to see him in the hotel. You're going to see him on the team bus. You're going to see him in the locker room. You're going to see him on the practice court. So there's a way to kind of work that out. But when you're taking shots at guys, you know, from high atop Mount Triangle, as I like to say, it doesn't work. And it really ticked off the players. It served to undermine the head coach, especially when the head coach, Jeff Hornacek, really didn't want to run the triangle, and he ended up doing that. So, Jim, Phil wanted to be a coach. He acted like a coach, but he was sitting in the 10th row, and he was the president of the Knicks.
Frank Isola joining us and breaking it down beautifully. Frank, I mean, when he came there, obviously he wanted to restore that great brand, restore that legacy. So the brand was not good when he got there, but did it get even more damaged now that he's left? I mean, is that even possible, but is it worse than it was when he first got there?
I really think it, in terms of the perception of the team, I think it was. I do think that he did a good job getting Porzingis, and this kid, Willy Hernan Gomez, is a good player. But what's interesting about it, the best thing that he did was Porzingis, and for some reason, he went to war with the kid. And no one is condoning what Kristaps Porzingis did. He never should have skipped that meeting. You know, that was a silly thing. It was a diva act by the kid. But it's the one dumb thing that he did over 2 years. And, you know, Phil Jackson just, A, wouldn't let it go, didn't handle it the right way. And why would you come on TV on the MSG network, the Knicks network, and say that, yeah, we're fielding offers for him, and if we get the right trade, we'll trade him. I thought that was a bad move on his part. So, and then there were stories out there, Jim, about agents who don't want to send their players to the Knicks because they're a laughing stock. Then you look at what happened at the NBA Awards show on Monday. The Knicks were kind of the butt of a couple of jokes. I don't think that set well with the Knicks organization. So, you know, Phil came in to restore credibility, make it a winning franchise, establish a culture, and let's face it, he did not do that. He failed at those tasks.
Frank Isola joining us. Frank, this is another amazing moment that you referenced that we haven't talked about yet, an especially brutal moment that you write about where Phil tried to use the triangle to recruit a free agent last season, but when he met with that free agent, he could not get his computer to work. What was that like and what happened next?
Yeah, they were sitting around a dining room table, and Phil was fumbling with the computer. Steve Mills got up and had to kind of help him out a little bit. And the reason why he wanted the computer on, because he had video that he wanted to show this free agent. And he wanted to show this free agent how he envisioned the Knicks playing and how they envisioned this free agent playing in their system. And the video was of the 90s Chicago Bulls, which is great. The 90s Chicago Bulls were terrific, but it really was a different NBA. And I think it kind of was an example of, you know, Phil kind of being stuck in a different time. And not realizing that, you know, the NBA was changing, the players of today were changing. In fact, that free agent, when he left the meeting, was wondering, had asked aloud, like, who's coaching this team? Is it Phil Jackson or is it Jeff Hornacek? Ultimately, the free agent ended up signing with another team. But I think it just kind of illustrates, you know, where Phil was. Everything with Phil was the triangle. And the more the Knicks lost, the more trouble that they got in, Phil just went back to what he knew best, which was the triangle. And after the Knicks got back from the All-Star break last year, he told Jeff Hornacek, we're going full-blown triangle, much to the chagrin of the players, and I really think it hurt Jeff Hornacek because Jeff Hornacek really doesn't want to run that offense. And when he agreed to do it, and you know this, Jim, it's all about credibility in the locker room for head coach and his players. And when that happened, I think the players said, you know what, this guy's not really running the team. It's really Phil, and I really think that hurt Jeff Hornacek's standing in the locker room.
All right, so, Frank, what about the triangle? I mean, is it a scheme that just doesn't work in today's NBA, or were the Knicks not able to run it the way it had to be run? In other words, was the problem the execution or the scheme?
I think the execution had something to do with it, but I think when you talk to a lot of coaches, a big problem with the triangle is that it's a mid-range jump-shooting offense where you don't draw a lot of fouls. In today's NBA, and maybe some people don't like it, but it's a three-point shooting league. So if you're shooting mid-range jump shots and you're not getting to the free throw line, it can be hard to win. And I think what also hurt Phil Jackson, I think he wanted so badly to prove that the offense could work. Well, the offense did work. It worked in the 90s. It worked with the Bulls, and it worked with the Lakers. But I think Phil also has to realize and has to be a little honest by the fact that it worked when in those teams he had two of the top five players in the league both times. I mean, in the case, you know, if Jordan was the best player in the league, Shaq was the most dominant when he had him in L.A. And you watch all those games, Jim. What happened late in the game when the Chicago Bulls needed the basket? It wasn't called triangle. It was called 23, as in get the ball to Michael Jordan and let him do it. And I still remember a great story from Ron Harper when he was being asked about the triangle once before a finals game. So it might have been an off day during the NBA finals, whatever year it might have been. And somebody asked him about the key to the success of the triangle. And Ron Harper said, well, first we try to get the ball to Shaq. If that doesn't work, we get the ball to Kobe. And if that doesn't work, we get the ball back to Shaq. There's your triangle offense.
That's so funny, Frank. I don't want to age us up, but, man, I miss Ron Harper. He was great, wasn't he?
He was, you know what, if you want to see him, go to a golf course. All he does now is play golf all the time.
Right. Must be nice. Your last thought, you mentioned Isaiah Thomas. Listen, Isaiah is saying that job does not interest him. I mean, does that mean there's no way, Frank, that Isaiah would end up with that job? Or is the idea of Isaiah as Knicks president like a monster in a horror film, and just when you think it's dead and over, this guy comes back to life with a vengeance?
Yeah, and I happen to like Isaiah Thomas personally. I think I have a pretty good relationship with him. I'm not talking to him every day. But, you know, I think Isaiah, when, you know, somebody told me that he could be a dark horse candidate, I didn't say that he's getting the job. I didn't say that he will be interviewed for the job. All I said was he's a dark horse candidate. I think he felt obligated to come out and, like, kind of shoot the whole thing down. It's being a little disingenuous. Who honestly believes that Isaiah Thomas does not want to be the president of the Knicks?
Right.
I mean, come on. You know, I get it. You know, he's coach. He's the president of the WNBA. That's a fine, you know, it's a fine league. But that's like saying a guy coaching in the Italian league or the Spanish league over in Europe, if you had a chance to get an NBA job, he said, no, I'm happy here in this league. The chance to run, you know, the NBA is the best basketball league in the world. There's only 30 of those jobs available. You could run a team. You can't tell me that he's not interested, but I get it. He has to make it seem like he's not campaigning for a job. He probably, you know, the way that works at the Garden, he probably thought these guys are going to think that I leaked that to Frank, so I got to come out. I got to kill it. But come on, everybody wants that darn job. He's the one guy in the world that doesn't want it. Who believes that?
Luke Kennard is my guest. Luke, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, Luke. I'm great. In the last 8 days, Luke, you've been drafted by Detroit. You turned 21. So how is it being Luke Kennard these days?
It's been going well. I mean, since the draft, I've been pretty busy. I've been down in Orlando the past few days. We started practice for summer league, and it's been a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying it so far.
All right. So in terms of practice, you're just now jumping into it, but does it feel like it's a major step up in intensity? And is there any kind of risk of information overload, or maybe does it all feel pretty comfortable right now?
No, I mean, it's definitely an adjustment. I mean, every guy is like they're the best at what they do, and the physicality, the speed of the game is a step higher. And one of the biggest things, it's a mental part of the game. And so far I've just learned a lot. I had a mentality coming into the practices of wanting to learn and get better, and that's exactly what I've done. So mentally, just adjusting to that part of the game and really being focused and locked in is one of the biggest things that I've taken away so far.
Luke Kennard joining us. Now, Stan Van Gundy is going to be your head coach, but summer league practices have been run by an assistant so far. But back to Van Gundy, he's got that reputation for being a no-nonsense guy. But at the same time, you did play for somebody with a similar reputation in Coach K. So what you've seen of Van Gundy, what's been your impression of him thus far?
He's like a very hands-on coach, and he's very honest with you. And you know that Coach K was the same way. I mean, and you know, I was successful in that kind of atmosphere. So, you know, Coach is always talking to me. He's always trying to teach me stuff, and it's been really good. I've enjoyed it so far, and like I've said, I think I've learned from the players and out of the coaches since I've been here so far, and it's just been really good.
Look, going back to Coach K for a minute, what are the biggest things, the biggest takeaways that you got from your time with Coach K while you were at Duke?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things is just to like off the court, is just to live in the moment. I mean, you know, this past week has been a big moment for me, and you know, Coach really, really preached about that, and you know, I've enjoyed this whole process so far. And another thing, like on the court, is just to compete. You know, if you have the mindset to compete every day and work hard every day, then you'll get better. And, you know, I listened and trusted in that, and that's what I did at Duke. And I'm just kind of transitioning that over to the NBA now with Detroit. And so far it's been a lot of fun, and, you know, it's really competitive.
Luke Kennard joining us. In terms of that work ethic, I think it's a good example of that. Coming into the draft, one of the aspects of your game that got a lot of attention was your footwork. Now, something like footwork does not sound especially exciting or sexy, but at the same time, it's something that guys like Kobe Bryant and Paul Pierce spent countless hours working on. When did you first start working on that aspect of your game, and then what does that allow you to do on the floor?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just worked on it, you know, since I've been in high school a little bit, but then once I got in college, you know, just to really focus in on the small details like that. So yeah, I think, you know, my freshman year and even more my sophomore year, the footwork was, you know, one of the big things I worked on, because, you know, it just being creative in that aspect of the game is, you know, one thing I really dialed in on, and, you know, it helped me. It helped me, you know, create plays and just be a playmaker, and you know, allowed me to get shots off.
Now, one of the guys that you said growing up that was a guy that you admired, your guy in fact, was Tayshaun Prince. What was it about his game that you liked?
Well, I was just a young kid, and you know, actually I grew up a Kentucky fan, so Tayshaun was he played on Kentucky when I was younger, and I just remember him being a lefty. I knew I was a lefty, so I tried to, you know, mimic his shot like perfectly when I was watching his games. And but yeah, he played for Detroit. You know, one thing about him is I just thought he was a very smooth player. I just liked the way he played the game. He was smart, really intelligent, and just his craftiness was something I picked up on and really enjoyed watching him play.
All right, so Luke, what's a bigger deal, getting drafted by Detroit or getting a Twitter shout out from Moe's Southwest Grill? I mean, I know the NBA has been a lifelong dream, and you've put in the time, but did you ever dare to dream about getting Twitter love from Moe's?
I never dreamed about that, but you know, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. No, I mean, obviously being drafted, it was my ultimate dream and one of my biggest goals. So that was special. That was one of the biggest moments of my life. And but, you know, that Twitter shout-out was pretty special, too. I'll have to admit that.
You know it. You know it. So when you heard your name called and you found out you were going to the D, what was your reaction?
Oh, I mean, it was a great moment. You know, just to share it with my family and friends, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was so surreal at the moment. But, you know, it was, like I said, it was a dream come true. It was a blessing. And just to have an opportunity to play there and play for Coach, and it was a really exciting moment.
The former champ, Brad in Corona. Bradley, what's going on, my man?
Jimothy, how are you, buddy?
Brad in Corona on a non-smack-off day. What's up, Brad? How are you?
I'm good. This is not an RSVP, though. I want to make that clear. I'm actually just calling in to finish up some light work before the long weekend, mostly because I heard Les in Legimic Beach's RSVP a couple days ago. Had a couple things I wanted to point out. Les, first of all, we need to have a serious come-to-Jesus meeting about you calling in here with personal appearance smack. I think there's an old saying, those who live in glass houses with a butt chin and Dumbo ears shouldn't throw stones at Chael Sonnen's dad bod or something like that. I forget how it goes. Jim, Lefrey mentioned Wednesday that I had a scheduling conflict for the smack off. And it's interesting because I'm not on Twitter. I never communicate with Les, but I do actually have a scheduling conflict. That's crazy, Les. You must have really had your ears to the ground on this one. Seriously, Rome, I don't know if you've seen Les' ears lately, but I'm pretty sure with those radar dishes tacked to the sides of his head that that dude can listen to your show without ever actually turning on his radio. He just opens the sunroof in his car, points his big old butt chin toward the heavens, and beams the signal directly through those ears and into his brain, Jim. The dude is a legend. Rumor has it he can hear a whisper from over 50 miles away. Hey, Les, you're a gimmicky little bitch. True story, Jimmy. If you cloned Les' ears and stapled one of them to the top of his head, the guy would transform into a human fidget spinner. My kids love those things. I'm serious, Les. I would pay huge money if you did that. We just let my kids show up and flick you. See how long it takes for your bulbous, floppy-eared head to stop spinning around like a top. Les, thank you, by the way, for calling in Wednesday without any gimmicks so that we could all remember the one thing we like about your phone calls. The gimmicks. Jim, Les' RSVP was like watching Carrot Top try to get through a stand-up routine without using any props. Bad idea, Les. You are the John in Little Rock of one-trick phone calls, my friend, so get out your crack pipe, dust off your gorilla balls or whatever other props you have in that stunt bag of yours, and just get straight to what we want from you, the gimmicks. Give us a gimmick, you're the gimmick man. Give us a gimmick tonight. Fly a copter, bum rush the studio, because other than that, your calls bite. Sorry, Jimmy, had to get that out of my system. Anyways, I will keep you posted on the 28th, Rome. You know I'm going to try to make it work. I'll check in next month with an RSVP. God bless. Have a great 4th of July. Enjoy the long weekend, bud.
Brother, Brad and Corona. Brother. Can I tell you, that non-RSVP call is going to be better than most smack-off calls. Got an RSVP. Chad in L.A. is in. Chad, you made it on. What's up?
Hey, Rome. Unlike that bag of Bologna, I do have the stones to show up in July, so I am calling in to RSVP. Brad, you can't go after someone about only running personal appearance smack with your own personal appearance smack. And Rome, did you catch this guy trying to pass off fidget spinning as a sport? What's your next sports take, Brad? Hacky sack smack? Brad and Corona has a fire take on hide and seek. Reaction! Brad, you're tired and expired, like moderately hard phlegm. Go away. And Rome, this news that Brett Favre, you know, the old gun texter himself, might go back and work for the Packers? When Caleb heard the news, he got so excited he rolled over onto his belly and tried to stand up. But then he just got tired and said, Mom, I'm hungry! This Favre deal is perfect, though. You've got Green Bay fans sitting around all day trying to spear a sturgeon, while Brett Favre sits in the front office sending pics of his spear to a sturger. Lastly, Les, you know your smack is weak when everyone is wondering, what's Les going to do, rather than what's Les going to say. After flying in restricted airspace and then breaking and entering, I guess the only felony Les to commit is, I don't know, like kidnap Jake or Logan and demand the $5,000 as ransom. His entire call is going to consist of Rome yelling over the air, give me back my son! Les, I'm going to bust you in your big mouth so bad you're going to look like sloth. We should call you Les and Lagoonies. You may have bum rushed the studio last year, but this year I'm doing the bum rushing, and you're going to get it in the end.
Oh, come on, Chad. That's an RSVP, though. He's in. He was top 10 last year. In fact, he was 7th. The guy who wins every single week is none other than Alvin DeLauro. With a look back at another amazing week here in the jungle. Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. I am Jim Rome. Just like that.
Back and ready to start another week. Hope you had a great weekend. Nice to be with you.
Let's go ahead and get it.
Lots to get to between now and then. Let me start in the NL West, starting with the Dodgers, because it happened again.
Yeah! Bellinger drills it.
I mean, Bellinger's got to cool off at some point, I think.
I'm not going to crown their
ass
just yet.
But the way they're playing right now, that marathon looks like a boat race.
They're going to be awfully tough to run down.
What happened, fat boy?
R.I.P. to these bros.
What's good, fat boy?
He's not.
Fat boy.
He's not.
Why are you calling him fat?
The fit alarm. Alvin, can I get this guy the fit alarm?
Jeff Passan is back.
The smack-off is July 28th.
Shalom. It means hello, which is me introducing myself to the smack-off for the first time. It also means goodbye, which is what every one of you can say to your chances after my call.
Kelvin been jamming into his face.
Well, people knew you were ready to roll.
Benjamin. They knew you were ready to roll.
Benjamin.
In fact, it looked like that was the best way of getting you down the field.
Wait a minute. Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated?
I was talking to him a little bit about what the modern NBA is like.
Not the game.
Monitoring what these guys eat. Wearable technology. 8 hours sleep. I mean, he looked at me like I was speaking another language.
You know, I mean, how silly is that?
That's not what he's doing.
That's a good question.
I personally believe.
Armani. Tractor. Desk. Such as Aardvark. Ethiopia. Pitchfork. Such as the taxi cab.
And that's the way Sandy Alderson did sound. That's a great take.
Quit filling your cookie jars with Big Macs. Quit putting Pepsi in your cereal. And most of all, quit being lazy as hell and reading books about cheap, quick gimmick workouts and just go work out.
Ian Desmond.
Yeah, man, that's this pocket socket thing. It's a little circle thing that goes on the back of the phone and just sticks on there and like allows you to like hold the phone in a different way.
Anybody else have a pop socket?
What was your life like before you got the pop? Sidney Crosby, how were you able to survive the injuries and the grind and still come out on top?
The guts and character of the guys. Some guys had some bad injuries, broken hands, broken ribs, and I don't know how they did it, but they found a way to go out there and get the job done, and guys showed a lot of character and will there to get us through.
Emails.
Nice interview. That Cindy gal sure has a deep voice, though. First of all, you should not be calling a man by a woman's name. It's not going to get you.
Giants quarterback Eli Manning. You ever say, hey, Odell, can you do me a favor? Make sure that I'm not the one that gets these questions.
You know, that's just part of it. When stuff happens, media are usually asked the head coach and asked the quarterback. You know, Odell and I, we talk constantly.
Oh, that's tight now. Felice Herrick trying to be
the bigger story is she didn't tap. The bigger story is she kept on fighting. She's that kind of fighter.
Man, they're different.
Email.
That one chick wiped the other one out. That will definitely hamper the loser's career. Pretty good, man. What are you, 5 years old?
Jim. Jim, I got something in my throat. I need a doctor. Just give yourself a Heimlich against your chair. Dr. Dave here to rescue. Living the doctor life and getting my new car tricked out.
Twitter. Two losers never make a winner. Dave Yeager.
Landed in Minneapolis last night. I'm driving up to Central Minnesota to do a little farm work and hang out, be quiet for a little while and relax.
All right, so a major trade right now involving the Rockets and the Clippers and lots of different angles here. Lots of different ways to go with this. So the question is, who makes out the best? What's the best way to go with this?
Go ahead and hit me up.
Doc Rivers was trying to make the argument that this thing's not broken. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, straight roads don't make skillful drivers.
Life is a struggle, it's a challenge. And these challenges are meant to make you stronger, to make you wiser, to make you better. It's like the old saying goes, geniuses are created in times of struggle.
Pitch is low, the throw down goes into left field.
It really sucks because, you know, like the stolen bases go with me.
That is fire.
The pitcher doesn't give me any help.
You gotta take responsibility, man. You gassed up that Greyhound bus and you ran right over your starting pitcher and backed over him.
That's the reason why they were running left and right.
He is my favorite Cub, or he was.
RSVP, Reserve Smack Off Victory Party.
Can't wait for July 28th when I make Chael Kish my rings. Clean up on Chael 4.
Tom Thibodeau is my guest.
773-899-6071.
What was your reaction when you saw him do that?
I just chuckled. I mean, that's Jimmy. Whether it's praise or criticism really doesn't matter. It's what he thinks and what we think. He'll use that as fuel for fire. He's never lost that hunger and drive that he had as a rookie, and that's what makes him so special.
Bro, can you get your hand off my elbow before you injure me? Bone Crusher is looking to snap my fingers. This guy's going to pull my shoulder out of its socket. Do not tweet porn unless you're in porn. Yeah, 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 yeah. Why are you doing that? It's not Friday. It is for me, clones. Just kidding. I'll be here tomorrow. What's cracking? Well, thanks, Alvy.
And just moving on with Chris Paul. Sorry, Rome, lost my train of thought there.
He dropped the hammer right on him, Alvy. Crushed him. He might have been all right, is what I'm saying.
Email.
Give us freaking Sandstorm. Two of them. Do I have to break out Kazoo Guy on this, too?
Way to go, Daniel. But I guess we should expect that kind of trash coming from a guy who throws surprise birthday parties for his cat.
John Calipari is my guest. What was your reaction when you woke up and you saw that story?
I mean, I guess it's good for headlines, but the reality of it is, you know, I'm over in Egypt. I'm on a different time frame right now.
Helicopter bum rush the studio, because other than that, you're called bite.
Keep your digits.
First, we try to get the ball to Shaq. If that doesn't work, we get the ball to Kobe. And if that doesn't work, we get the ball back to Shaq. There's your triangle offense.
Growler.
Never piss off a gangster.
Dingleberry.
Jim, always a pleasure, and you got to get out this way.
I'm going to get you a donkey.
We
almost hit that camel.
Que paso, amigo?
You're a gimmicky little bitch.
Good night now!
Alvy legend. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you, always. Now do what you do. Trust that podcast. Appreciate the podcast. Enjoy your holiday weekend, and check back next week for more Daily Jungle. See you then.